All right. Trust you slept well last night. Genesis is where we'll start. This is a mess up here. I wish somebody would... This is worse than a room. Worse than the Blue Cabin. Thank you for shutting that door, though, brother. I was getting ready to come up and shut that door, and you did. I appreciate that. Our ministry is called Open Door Baptist Ministry, but some doors I like closed. All right, decisions determine destiny. Are you there in your notebook? You know, people say that what happens to them in life is primarily made up of three matters. Some people say, well, it's my circumstances. You know, I was born on the wrong side of the tracks. I grew up in the wrong place. It's people around me. It's just my circumstances. And so I am what I am and am where I am and doing what I'm doing because of my circumstances. Very fatalistic. When we were in Africa, the belief there is that the ancestors, the dead ancestors, basically control everything. And so regardless of you, let's say you're saving money for something, which I believe the Bible teaches, they would say, well, what's the use of that? Because the ancestors, if they don't like me, they're just going to take it away anyway. And what's the use of living a pure life because the ancestors are angry at me? I'm going to get sick and die anyway. So we were up against those kind of things. So people believe that it's just their circumstances. People in the world also believe that it's just chance. There's a second reason why things happen. It's just chance. And, of course, that comes from evolutionary thinking. As evolution makes its way in and through our society, they believe that everything's just up to chance. It's not really the circumstances. It's not me. It's just a chance. We were working with a fellow in Zimbabwe, and he had a good response to people always talking about luck. Well, it was luck, or he was lucky. And he finally said to someone one time, he said, you know, this lucky sure gets a lot of credit for everything. Who is this lucky? On kind of a humorous note, we had a large correspondence Bible course there in some of the South African countries, and you'll never guess what the most used name was of our students who were in prison. We had 30 guys by the name of Lucky. All in prison. And then some people believe that everything, like almost the ancestor worship, is from an outside cause, and there's nothing I can do to really change it. People will say, in the West, they will say, well, it was meant to be. Have you ever heard that? So they just think that it's either circumstances or chance or it's from some other cause. But really, I believe the Bible teaches, and we'll see this morning, that it's not circumstances and chance and cause so much as it is our choices. And that's what I'm going to talk about this morning, are our choices. And we want to give you a biblical perspective, Lord willing, using five words, okay? We're going to try to make this real simple here this morning. But here in Genesis chapter 1, we find the first biblical teaching about choices. And if you want to write down the word constitution, now I'm not thinking about a state constitution, I'm thinking about our constitution, our makeup. We are designed to make choices. In Genesis 1, verse 26, we read, and God said, let us make man in our image after our likeness. Just pause there. So God said, let's make a man like us in our likeness. Now, we realize there are some ways we aren't like God. God can be inside the room and outside the room at the same time. You and I are localized in a body, and we can't be inside and outside at the same time. Unless you're a blonde. Just joking. Look, if you will, at chapter 2. Verse 16, the Lord God commanded the man, saying, of every tree of the garden thou mayest freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die. Man was made in God's image in that man was designed to be able to make choices, and then the very next chapter, God said, okay, now I don't want you to do this if you do this, suggesting that they could make a choice to disobey, and they did make the choice to disobey. And so we find that our makeup is such that God designed us to make choices. We may not like to make choices, but much of life involves decision-making. Believe it or not, you made a lot of decisions this morning. You decided when the alarm went off whether or not you were going to get up or whether you're going to sleep a little bit longer. You decided what you were going to wear. You decided, you know, if you were going to brush your teeth or not. You decided if you were going to have breakfast or not, or how much, or how many pieces of toast. We make a lot of choices. In fact, probably in a day's time, we make thousands of choices, and we don't even realize it. Now, some choices are basically just automatic. If I choose to walk across the front of the auditorium here, you know, I'm making a lot of choices to talk, to turn my head, to walk, to put one foot in another, and a lot of those are just kind of automatic sort of things, you know. Our brother who's leading the singing, you know, is making a choice to use his hand. Sometimes the guys don't use their hand. Sometimes they use their left hand. Sometimes they use both hands. We make a lot of choices. You're choosing whether or not to look at me or whether to look down at your Bible. I mean, we make a lot of choices. And some of those choices, of course, are major choices, and some of those are minor choices. Here in our text, we find that God made a lot of choices in chapter 1, where he chose to create this and chose to make that. And, of course, then not only did he give Adam and Eve the choice, or you know, to sin or not to sin, but he gave Adam the choice to name the animals. And, of course, that involved a lot. So you can see that our constitution is such that we are designed to make choices. So if we're designed to make choices, then we need to make choices. Now, maybe you're like, how many of you struggle at a buffet? You know what a buffet is, you know? Sometimes when I go to a buffet, I want to be in the front of the line. I don't want to be in the back of the line because some people will just stand there for the longest time and try to decide what they want to eat. And I say, just get it on the plate. Get it down the hatch. 6 hours from now, you'll forget what you're going to have anyway. Just get it and enjoy it. And so I'm one of those that likes to make, I can't really stomach people that take a long time at a buffet. Some choices are automatic. Some we have to ponder. We've maybe never made before. Can I ask you this? How many of you, this is the first time you've come to camp? Is there anybody here, it's the first time you've been to camp? Okay, one, two, three, okay. Second year for some of you? Okay. Now, maybe you didn't have a choice, but I rather think probably at your age you were given a choice to come or not, and you chose to come, okay? So we make a lot of choices. That's our makeup. That's our constitution. I think that's the first thing we need to understand. Now, there are some choices that you don't have to make yet, okay? Like, you don't have to decide right now whether or not you're going to get married or who you're going to marry. What your choice should be right now is to stay pure until you get married, okay? That's what your choice should be. So, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation, and that is a decision that needs to be taken care of ASAP. Right? But some of these other choices are not that critical. Maybe some of you young men are considering the call of God on your life for ministry, but you say, I really don't know if I want to be a missionary and go to a foreign area. Do I want to be a church planter here? Do I want to, you know, teach in a Christian school or a Bible college? Or what do I want to do? Well, what you need to do is just surrender to prepare. Prepare you know, and then let that decision come down the line. So there's some decisions that God doesn't want us to make right now, but there are some that he does. That's our constitution. Okay, second thought I want us to have here this morning. Not only are we made to make choices, but here it is, character. If you want to write that down, character. Because our character determines a lot of our choices. If you'll turn to the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 4. Deuteronomy 4, verse number 37. It's talking about the Lord here, and it shows us how the Lord made a choice very clearly here, Deuteronomy 4, verse 37. And because he loved thy fathers, therefore he chose their seed after them, brought thee out in his sight with his mighty power out of Egypt. If you jump over to chapter 7, verse number 6, it reads, For thou art an holy people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself. Now, what we learn here is that God made us to make choices. God has made choices here. It clearly is laid out that God has made choices. And God's character, it's said back there, because he loved, he chose. God so loved the world that he gave. God's character caused and causes him to make certain choices. Now, because we're made in the image of God and we have that constitution, that makeup, then our character, a lot of times, determines the choices we make. You give me a young person that has good character, probably he's going to make good choices. The opposite's true. A young man without, or a young lady without good character is going to make bad choices. So you see people making bad choices, you say they don't have much character. Or they have a lot of character. Now, how do we develop character? If I'm going to make the right choices, good choices, godly choices, so that when I get to be, you know, an old person like Brother Wilhite, I won't have the regrets, you know, maybe that Brother Wilhite or someone else does. So let me give you five ways that God uses in our life to develop character. And I would say the first way, and these are alliterated as well, the first thing is time. Time. It takes time, and sometimes we experience through time events in our life that teach us, well, that was a good choice or that was a bad choice. And so over the course of time, we can develop character. That's why my little granddaughter, Olivia, who's just 11 months old, I don't expect her to have the character that I do Cassidy, who's 12 years of age. You see, but over time, hopefully Olivia will develop character. You may not be old in the Lord. You may not be very old. What's our youngest age here? 13? 13? We got some 12-year-olds? Okay. Who's a 12-year-old? Raise your hand. Okay, we've got a couple of 12-year-olds here. All right, 3, 4, 5. Okay, good. All right, and then what in the world is grade 13? I've never heard of grade 13. All right, so who had to take grade 12 over again and they're in grade 13? Okay, all right. I saw that and I said, what is grade 13, you know? Okay, okay, all right. Well, that's good. All right, now, those that are 12 years of age should have character. I mean, it's interesting in the study of Jesus, the character that he had at the age of 12. If you're 12, would you be found doing what Jesus was able to do? I mean, he was evidently able to take care of himself for at least 3 days, a day's journey and a day back and a day looking around. Not only was he able to take care of himself, but who was he mixing with? He wasn't with the boys down by the Kidron Valley, you know, throwing stones across there, trying to hit the olive trees on the other side. He was with older people and able to converse with them and able to talk. That was a 12-year-old. So 12-year-olds ought to have a lot of character, but definitely the grade 13s, 18, 19 years of age, should have more, right? So time. There's a second way to develop character, and those are the tests. The tests that God brings. A lot of times you face an obstacle. And that test, that challenge that you face, is designed to teach you character. One of the good things about camp and the team effort, things like this, I don't know who's leading. Do we know who's leading? And the blue still leading here? Okay. All right, now, are the red going to give up and die? Are they going to take that challenge and say, no, we're going to come back and we're going to give it our all, and so if we die, we're going to go down, you know, we'll be down for the count. But we'll do our very best. That's what I'm trying to say. So tests, like when God was calling us to Africa, and God began to show me these verses, or calling us to Africa and then calling us to Australia, and God began to show me, I thought, you know, initially when I was called to Africa, I was pastoring in a good church. I was an assistant pastor. And, you know, assistant pastors, youth pastors, they don't have to do anything. You know, they just kind of coast, take it easy. It's the senior pastor that has to make all the tough decisions. And I was an assistant pastor. And I had all these children, you know, 9 children. God was calling me to go to Africa, which was an 18-hour flight away. I didn't know where in Africa. And it was a real test. And I remember wrestling with God January, February, March, and finally in April of 2000, April the 10th. I was laying in my bed looking straight up at the ceiling, 6:20 in the morning, and said, okay, God, I'll go to Africa. But that was a challenge because I thought taking that many people that far to who knows where in Africa and what there's there. We know there's HIV, there's AIDS, there's cholera, there's all sorts of disease, there's fighting, there's African politics. You know, there were all these challenges and there were those tests. But God had to take us through those tests so that when we got to Africa, we were ready. So time and tests, God uses the challenges. Don't take the easiest path. I don't know if you're familiar with the book, Pastor O, but there's a book that I think every young person in here should read. And it's entitled, Do Hard Things. Do Hard Things. Paperback book. Anybody familiar with that book? Yeah. Have you read it? Or was it too hard to read it? Okay, so take those challenges. Take those tests. They develop you. I heard a poem read this last, or actually more of an illustration this last Sunday. The pastor in the church where we were carries in his Bible. And it was if God came to this man in a dream. God doesn't come in dreams, but it was if God came to him in a dream and told him outside his cabin there was this big rock and he just wanted him to push the rock. And went out that next morning, he just put his hand up against that and just pushed. That rock was not going anywhere, but he pushed all day long and all the next day and all the next day and the next day and the next day and the next week and month and year. He just went out pushing the rock and pushed and obviously wasn't moving it anywhere. But he didn't give up. He just kept doing it. And finally one day he says, God, he said, I'm not moving this rock. And God said, I didn't ask you to move the rock. I asked you to push the rock. He said, now look at your arms and how strong your back is and your legs. The exercise that was happening there, what was being developed, and you didn't realize that. But you see, it was that test. It was that rock. It's a challenge, okay? And you think, well, my family, my situation, my circumstances are such that I just wish I was out. And the only reason I'm at camp is because I want to get away from my dad who's a drunk. Or I want to get away from responsibility. Or I want to get away from that challenge that I'm facing, that difficulty. I just want it out. And a lot of times we end up blaming God for those rocks that God has given us to push. So it's time, it's test, and then thirdly, it's trouble. It's trouble. And I mean, those aren't necessarily just the challenges we face. That's difficulty, that's affliction. Some of you are facing some real struggle. I don't know how some of you keep a sweet spirit with some of the challenges, sickness in your family that I know about, you know about, maybe you know who I'm talking about. why would God allow this in my life at this time when I'm young? And it's trouble like that. I remember when I was in my mid-20s to late 20s, and I got a call. My brother was in the hospital. And he got out. A few months later, he went back. This went on for 3 years. And I was talking to my other brother, and I said, why is our youngest brother, why is he in and out of the hospital? He said, well, he said, I can't tell you. I'll let him tell you. And I called him up on the phone. And he said, and he told me, and I'm not going to go into detail, but he told me, he said, it's my fault. He said, I got into sin, and I'm carrying such and such a disease. And we talked for about an hour, and I hung up the phone. My wife can tell you, for the next several weeks, I thought, why? Why? I remember telling a friend of mine, he was pastoring in New Jersey, I was in his office, and I said, Doug, I said, you won't believe it. My brother's got such and such a disease. I was laying on the floor looking straight up at the ceiling saying, God, why? He died in 1992. I said, why? 8 years later, when God called us to Africa, that disease that my brother died of is the same disease that kills thousands of people every year in every country in Africa. And God used that affliction in my life to prepare me for the future. And I didn't realize that. I didn't know that. I'm just saying, why, God? And you might be going through something now that God is using. It's an affliction in your life. And God's using it now. Maybe it's in your life. God has something for it. God has a plan. God knows best. Okay? Your decision cannot necessarily change that affliction, but it can change your outlook and how you respond to that affliction. And you have the right to choose that, and the opportunity, and the ability with God to be able to respond rightly. So time and tests and trouble. And I think there's a fourth thing that develops character, and that is testimony of others as you watch others. God brings other people into your lives. Some of them have good testimonies, some have bad testimonies, and you can learn from that. A fifth matter that God uses to develop character is training. And by that, I mean discipline from others. So that when you do wrong and you get corrected for that, or scolded, or grounded, or whatever, God is using that to develop character. Now, why? Because character, good character, is so necessary for making the right choices. And so God is willing to let you go through a lot to develop your brawn and your backbone and your brain to develop character so that you'll make right choices, because life is made up of choices. So we got our constitution, we got our character. Let's move along quickly. The third letter I want to give you this morning, third word, is the word consequences. Consequences. Choices have results. They have consequences. Now, I thought this was a good verse that you went over today about Moses. And, you know, when you think about that verse there, yeah, you want to bring that over, Chris, just quickly there. Thank you. Okay, so when you think about choices having consequences, Moses chose rather to what? Suffer affliction with who? With the people of God, than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, choosing rather, you know, or esteeming, I should say, the reproach of Christ. You say, well, Christ wasn't in the Old Testament. Well, I think it's referring to the Messiah there, the promises of the Messiah through Israel. He chose to be on Israel's side rather than on the Egyptian side. He chose to be on the side of the people of God instead of the people of the world. That was a major choice. And you know, when Moses died, the testimony of the Bible is that there was not another man like Moses. I had this thought this morning. What if Moses had not made this choice and he'd have stayed with the Egyptians? You know, his body wouldn't be buried at the top of the mountain, but it'd probably be in the bottom of the Red Sea. Because God would have found somebody else. If you do the numbers there and realize, you know, the Pharaoh that Moses was fighting against very likely was a stepbrother of his. Because of the Pharaohs, and then he was the son of the Pharaoh's daughter. Now this is several years later. So they knew each other from years ago. Brother fighting brother. But he made a right choice. Now, did it wasn't easy leading the children of Israel through the wilderness, you know. But he counted the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Okay? So, choices have consequences. Some choices are minor, they're insignificant, they're temporary. For example, let me see a blue sash. All right, now let me see a red sash. Okay, you know what? A year from now, you'll probably forget what color you had. And you say, well, that wasn't my choice. I wanted to have a blue one when I was a red one. But you know what I'm saying? Some things aren't as important, and that's not to minimize, you know, any choice and things like that, but some have temporary consequences, some have long-term consequences. This morning I got up, was trying to decide what shirt to wear. Now you will never guess what color shirt I have in my suitcase that I'm going to wear tomorrow. I debated about wearing that today. Instead, I chose to wear this brown shirt. So tomorrow you'll see what color shirt I'm going to wear. Is it going to be red? Is it going to be blue? It's one of those colors. So that's a minor thing. But there are some major choices that are significant choices, long-lasting. And I want to give you four questions to ask yourself when making choices that are significant choices. And if you write these down, I think this is important, okay? A question to ask when making a major choice, like something that we have up here. Okay, ministry, marriage, maybe a purchase, a career, something like that. Four questions, I think, and I could add to these probably. But number one, how will this affect my relationship with God? So if you choose to go to uni and there's no good church in the area to attend, maybe God doesn't want you to go to uni there. How's this going to affect your relationship with God? Listen, when you go to uni, it's going to be a little bit more challenging than in your home. In fact, maybe a lot more challenging. And if there's any time you need to be walking with God, it's in uni. Second question. Will this please God-given authorities in my life? People that God has placed over me. If I make this choice, will this please them? Will this honor them? Mom and Dad are saying, no. Well, you know, I just got to try this. Got to be my own man. Time for me to make a choice. I thought we read Ephesians 6, 2, and 3 to honor your parents. Well, you know, now, daughter, listen, that skirt, you've got that hiked up too high. And he's been, oh, come on, Mom. All the other girls... Is that honoring to mom and dad? Will this choice honor the God-given authorities? Listen, you didn't ask for your parents. And if you'll understand that God gave me my parents, and I'm in this, and I don't understand this, I don't know why dad is like this, and mom is like this, I don't know. But you'll honor them. Because they're consequences if you don't. Number three, is there any eternal value or merit to this choice? Okay, so it's soul winning, letterboxing. But you get the choice to go to the shore. Some of you may have had the choice to come here as opposed to go to a secular camp. You made the right choice. I don't know. Some young people maybe already have jobs. I've been kind of surprised at how young kids are working in some of the stores, you know, 17, 18 years of age. And maybe you work a job, okay? Maybe you're confronted with a situation like I was confronted with one time when I was working a job. They needed somebody to work on a, just work one Sunday night. Just one Sunday night. And my brother and I, we were working in this warehouse during the summertime. We were pulling orders, we called it, taking groceries to a truck. And the boss said, Jerry, need somebody to work on Sunday night. Well, I was headed to Bible college, and so I thought, man, I could use some extra money. Won't hurt if I skip church just one Sunday night. I got to thinking about that after I told him yes. There were 60 part-timers. And my brother and I were one of the top five that they would ask. It wasn't because of us. It's because our dad was such a good worker. But anyway, and there's a whole story behind that. But got to talk to my brother. And we decided, you know, I think we'll tell him no. We went to the office and we said, no, we can't. And we didn't know what that would mean. They might not ask us to work extra hours again. We didn't know if we'd have, you know, sufficient funds for college anyway. I mean, it looked like every good reason to, I mean, what's one Sunday night? Just one Sunday. I mean, I was at church every other Sunday night, Sunday morning, Sunday school, Wednesday night. What's wrong with one Sunday night? But what was of eternal value? Fourth question. How will this affect my testimony to the lost around me? How will this affect my testimony to the lost around me? What will they think if I do this? Or if I do that? Or if I go here, go there? What are they going to think? Wait a minute. Didn't you? You invited me to camp. We went to camp together. In fact, I think we were sitting together kind of on the second row, and we were on the opposite teams, but I remember looking over and seeing you, and that short guy, what's his name? Will Short. Will Height. When he's talking about this, why? What? So, and you make a choice, and that person that you came to camp with that's not saved, oh, I guess things that God and camp and eternal decisions really don't matter. Their life is no different, really, when the pressure's on than mine. So that salvation stuff is a bunch of hooey. So how will those decisions affect my relationship with God, my relationship with those around me, over me, I should say? Is there any eternal merit or value to this, and how will it affect the lost? And you could probably add to that. But the fourth thought that I want to give you this morning here, we've talked about our constitution, our character, the consequences. But write down the word command, because number four, God gives us a command to make good choices. And Joshua, in Joshua 24, I don't know if that's one of the verses for this week, Joshua 24:15, is it? Choose you this day whom you will serve. There's a song that goes along with that. Choose you this day whom you will serve. Will you serve the Lord? Choose you this day whom you will serve. Will you serve the Lord? But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. We will serve the Lord. We will serve the Lord. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. We will serve the Lord. And then it goes over again. Choose you this day. So God says choose. Okay, make a choice. I think of 1 Kings chapter 18, verse 21. Write that reference down. That's Elijah who said to the people, choose whom you're going to serve. I think in John 6 and verse 67, when many of the disciples walked away, called disciples, I don't think they were genuine disciples, I think they were just for a time, but they chose to walk away, and Jesus asked the 12, will ye also go away? Make a choice. So we're commanded many times to make right choices. Number five, the fifth truth I want to give you here, is that, if you want to write down the word characters, there are a lot of characters in the Bible who have made right choices. I have listed several here. I've listed Joseph in the Old Testament from Genesis 37 and verse number 2, where it says that Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. He dared to side with right. It cost him, but did you see how God was in that anyway? Down in Egypt, and then, boy, he was in the right place at the right time, even though it didn't look like it for many, many years. But he made a right choice. A second example, or a second character, I think that we find in the Bible is Ruth. Ruth 1, verses 16 and 17. Where she said to her mother-in-law, entreat me not to leave thee, or cease from following after thee. For where thou goest, I will go, and where thou diest, I will die, and there will I be buried. She made a right choice. Even though it meant leaving her family, it meant leaving her home, it meant leaving her language, it meant leaving her culture, it meant leaving all that, she made a right choice. And sometimes we do have to make those choices. Thirdly, I think of Daniel. In Daniel chapter 1 and verse number 8, but Daniel purposed in his heart, he made a choice that he would not defile himself with the king's meat. By the way, one of the reasons why the cell phones, the electronic devices, and the television, and internet, all that has been taken away, you know what that is? You're fasting from the king's meat. You take away the king's meat and the influence of culture, and it's interesting how you can make some right choices and right decisions. And you know, if on your own you chose to limit yourself and not be as tied into some of those things of the world, just think, every week could be a camp week in your life without being a camp, because you made right choices to disfellowship yourself with that. I think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel chapter 3, verse 17 and 18, who did not bow and would not bow. You probably heard a message somewhere along the line, they would not bow, they would not burn. Even though they knew, they said, hey, king, whatever you want to do, you can do, but just know that we are not going to bow. And they didn't. I think another example is Esther. In Esther chapter 4, verse number 16, where she said, if I perish, I perish. And there was a choice. I think of Peter and John in Acts chapter 5, in verse number 29, who said, in the face of persecution, we ought to obey God rather than men. So there are some characters. You can probably just go through the Bible and find many. Now, if God were writing the Bible again, or if he was adding some books to it, I wonder if he'd put your name down. This person made a right choice. This person chose not to bow. This person decided to take a stand against the world and against the ungodly. This person made an eternal choice. Well, we know that God's not going to write the Bible again. But in whenever you read about them, could you say, am I a Joseph? Am I a Ruth? Am I a Daniel? Am I a Shadrach, a Meshach, an Abednego? Am I an Esther? Am I a Peter? Am I a John? You see, young people and adults, we need to understand that it's our decisions that determine our destiny. And so if you're going to go down the right path in life, you've got to be someone who is developing a character, a constitution that makes right decisions now. Because you, if you're making wrong decisions now, if the counselor says lights out and quiet, and you think, oh, he's not really serious about that, and you yak a little bit longer and whisper to the guy that's in the bunk above, you know, that choice that you're making is not good character. You're making wrong choices now in the little things. You think you're going to make right choices in the big things? I don't think so. So it's the little choices. Solomon wrote, it's little foxes that, what? Spoil the vines. Okay? So you're being groomed and developed, not to be robots, but to be people who are godly, that are going to make right choices, so that when these issues come, the issues down the road that God doesn't want you to make right now, God just wants you making right choices right now for the little things, okay? Then later, you'll have that character, you'll have that design, it'll be natural to you, you know? So that you'll make the right choices. So decisions determine destiny. Our choices determine our destiny. It's not just our circumstances. It's not just an outside cause. It's not just, you know, luck or anything like that. It's our choices. And so choices are so, so important. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes. Would you pray right now in your heart, God, help me make right choices.